From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for August 23rd, 2019. Checking the calendar. Cerveza, senor. It's Mexican Fiesta this weekend at the Summerfest grounds. The Arizona Diamondbacks are in town for a weekend with the Brewers, and Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits is at the Pabst Theater next Saturday. That'll be a good show. It's still August, but apparently it's already pumpkin spice season. Thank you, Starbucks. But not to be outdone, Hormel is rushing pumpkin spice spam into grocery stores. I'd like to say pumpkin spice spam isn't a real thing, but it is. Here's a puzzle men don't understand, and most women don't either. A South Dakota woman was rushed to the hospital with painful kidney stones. Well, those kidney stones turned out to be triplets. Put me down in the category of, how's that even possible? And speaking of impossible, a woman tried to smuggle an alligator out of Florida by hiding it in her yoga pants. The problem, of course, is she was wearing the yoga pants. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Steve Giles, Paige Ratke, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. We were doing pretty good until today, and the market sold off in a pretty good sell-off. NASDAQ shed 144 points this week, losing 1.8% to close at 7752. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, S&P stock composite 500 lost 1.4%, shedding 41 points to close at 2847. Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 256 points this week, a 1% decline. We close at the Bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 25,630. Market still doing pretty good year to date. NASDAQ up almost 18%, S&P up 15.1, and the Dow up 11.7. Kyle, let's talk first about the yield curve. You know, I get so many questions about the yield curve having inverted and inverted again this week. And I think people have to be careful. You know, on the one hand, yes, the last six recessions were preceded by an inverted yield curve. But that doesn't mean every time the yield curve inverts that a recession follows. You know, the two things that we were taught early on managing money is never trust anybody that says, trust me, and never trust anybody that says, this time it's different. But it might be different this time around with the inverted yield curve. There are two thoughts that come to my mind. One is there's $16 trillion of negative yielding bonds, mostly Europe, right? That's a lot of money. So, all right, our 10-year, give or take 1.5%, not a big number, but it's a positive number. And it's certainly higher than a negative yield that you see in Europe. So my suspicion is a lot of money has found its way to the United States, where they get at least a positive yield on their money, keeping the long end of the Treasury market yields lower. And then the second point is, we all know that the Fed is on the cusp of a continuation of lowering rates, that we're going to get one or two more rate cuts this fall, couple, maybe three next year. So that the short end of the market is going to come lower because we all know that the overnight rate's going to come down. So I think if you take a look at those two issues, I don't think it's a stretch to say that might be a little different this time around.
Yeah, I think such a great point, Bob. And you look at the short end of the yield curve being controlled by the Fed right now, and the Fed maybe a little bit slower to respond than the market has been. As you mentioned, to some of that demand that's come from overseas investors, to some of that demand for U.S. treasuries that maybe isn't the typical demand that we see at this point in the business cycle. You know, so many people point to that inversion as the precursor to recession, and I think it's worth pointing out that that's largely because investors tend to pour money into that safe alternative, into that long-term treasury, lock it up, and then it makes that money unavailable to make its way through the system in other ways. And so in many ways, that inversion becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You don't have the flow of cash that you need to grow the economy. And so, you know, I think the fact that this time around may be a little bit different could be one of those times where the inversion doesn't mean as much as it previously did.
You and I were talking earlier today about so many questions that we get from clients. Hey, Bob, I read that we could be in a recession. I read that we may be going into a recession. You know, what's that all about? And people have this need, you know, to know the future. You and I are both very clear on the fact that predicting recessions is almost impossible. There's too many variables. We can, however, tell you trend line. We had 3% GDP growth last year, 2% this year, probably 1% next year. So the trend is clear. But we're not in a recession now in the United States. We may not go into a recession in the United States. 70% of our economy is driven by consumer spending, and consumers are in pretty good shape right now. Secondly, the next 20% of the GDP in the U.S. is government spending. They're doing a pretty good job spending our tax money. And then the third is business spending. That's the one that's kind of fallen off the cliff. But it is only 10% of our economy. And a lot of the business spending is going down because companies don't have clarity because of the trade conflicts. But it probably isn't going to be enough to take the wheels off the cart of the economy, because our economy is too big and most of it is driven by government spending and consumer spending that appears at this point to be fairly steady and on track.
And Bob, I think if we're honest with ourselves, we could pull economic data from either side and point to, yeah, the recession is coming or the recession is here, or we could pull it from the other side and say, you know, there's a lot of good news still out there. You mentioned consumption being 70% of the U.S. economy, and the consumer is in outstanding financial shape. You know, net wealth as large as it's been. You look at liabilities, you look at the liability side of the balance sheet, and it looks a little bit healthier than it's looked in a long while. And so, you know, I think the concern is maybe that more people are putting emphasis right now on some of the bad news rather than the good news. And yeah, maybe that's because there's more bad news now than there's been in a little while. But I think a lot of it too is just that we're still waiting for the recession to come. You know, we've never fully gotten over the last recession. We just keep assuming that, well, it's got to come, and it's going to be terrible because the last one was terrible. I mean, if you keep living in what we've had in the past, maybe you miss some of the opportunity that's here right now. The other side of that, too, is that I think, you know, maybe you miss that this recession is going to look very different than the last one did. And so maybe it's not as severe, maybe it's not as long. Whatever it might be, I don't think we're looking for typical anymore. I think we're trying to see how can we best position for a variety of outcomes.
Steve, what's your take on the markets these days?
Well, Bob, I find it very interesting that you're starting to see the riskier asset classes in the wake of what is obviously a slowing economy up against some more headwinds. Trade and tariff talk haven't helped some of those technology names, some of the growthier asset classes. And as we saw in the Dow this week, it was the one index that held the best relative to the S&P, relative to the NASDAQ. Thankfully, the NASDAQ had a pretty big head start this year, but it just reminds me, and it helps to remind investors, that balance is important. Pay attention to your weightings with growth and value. And just because something has done well for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, as growth has done, doesn't mean we want to continue overweighting it as we look out into the future.
Paige, your turn. What do you think about the markets?
One thing that I've been really keeping my eye on is just what's driving the market on a given day, right? It's interesting to note that recent moves have been a lot more technically driven rather than fundamentally driven. You know, so you have to look every day. Tweets come out about tariffs or things like that, and suddenly the market's down 3%. Now, did all of those companies really become 3% less valuable? No, probably not. So anytime you see this kind of volatility, especially on things that are a little bit more headline risk, you always have to take a step back and say, okay, was this downturn really a result of something to do with the companies, or is it more just a fear of what might be coming going forward?
Joel, let's bring you in. You had a couple of mixed indicators as existing home sales. Doing pretty good. New home sales, not so much.
Bob, the existing home sales are the bigger part of the market, and that was the highest it's been in a couple of months, and that was a good sign. And as far as consumers are concerned, you know, as we said, I mean, they're actually the strong part of the economy right now, which is good because they're the big part of the economy. And so home sales have been going pretty well. And so we had existing home sales, and those went up, and the new home sales went down a little, but they... they're a smaller part of the market, but the big news out of the new home sales report was that there are more new homes that are on the market, and that's what the National Association of Realtors has been saying they need to help the housing market, because they've had a shortage of houses for sale, so that should help that. And, you know, the whole housing market also feeds into a report yesterday, or today, I guess it was, from the conference board about leading economic indicators, and they look at 10 different categories, and it's a reputable group, and they've been doing this for a long time. And you know, when it comes to talking about recession, I mean, they're looking ahead over like 6 months or so, and they're saying through the end of the year that they're actually seeing the U.S. economy continue to expand, and part of it is the strength of the consumer. And when you've got things like housing, which you know, isn't as high as it was before the last recession, but it's still pretty strong. And on the days when you've got the stock market up, that feeds into the whole wealth effect, where consumers feel more confident and they're going to spend more. And the other big number that we had this week was the continuing number on jobless claims. You know, we're near 50-year lows for the number of people filing first claims for unemployment. And keep in mind that we've got, I think, like 90 million fewer people who are working age. We've got 91 million more people who are working age now than we had 50 years ago. So the fact that the number is near that 50-year low is pretty impressive. But that, too, feeds into the whole psychology of the consumers saying, hey, I must be, you know, feeling pretty good about where I am and what I'm doing, and that ends up, you know, helping me spend more money.
And then the logical next step, of course, is for wages to start increasing more than the anemic increases that we've seen in the last couple of years. It gets harder to hire. It's pretty obvious you got to pay existing workers a little bit more to keep them and maintain your existing workforce.
Right, and that hasn't come along as quickly or as largely as we'd like, but you know, in recent months we've been seeing more of that wage increase too, and that of course helps too.
Kyle, let's talk about earnings. FactSet thinks that earnings could go up, S&P earnings 11% next year over this year, 9% 2021 from 2020. Pretty hard to guess that far out. And, you know, even if a slowdown accelerates, you're still looking at pretty good earnings numbers. So to me, I think it's important to think longer term as a stock investor. I mean, the whole reason why we have bonds in a portfolio is to take care of your short-term needs in the event that stocks sell off. But it's clear to me that earnings are reaccelerating now, that, you know, we had a big pop on earnings because of the tax law the president signed in December 17 that spilled into 18, huge increase in corporate profits, you know, kind of flat for this year, but you look at the two-year average, look pretty decent, and now earnings are supposed to accelerate, you know, 11% next year, 9% the year after. That's pretty good. That'll eventually spill into higher stock prices.
And, you know, I think the good news there, Bob, is it builds in a little bit of cushion if we are disappointed, that it doesn't turn into negative earnings growth or you know, maybe just flat, that there's still a little bit of room for us to be disappointed in those numbers if we do see a little bit more slowdown here. And so, you know, you talk about 11%, even if we back that off to something like, you know, 7 to 8%, that's right around the typical range for what we should expect for the S&P. And, you know, longer term, you look at a market that's more or less fairly priced, maybe a little overpriced right now, and you see 8% earnings growth. You know, you look at the direction of earnings and stocks long term, and stock prices long term, they tend to look pretty similar. And year to year, it can look pretty different. But, you know, if you're growing 7 or 8% a year in earnings, you should see 7 or 8% a year in terms of the growth of the underlying stock prices. And so, you know, the hope is that if we can get, you know, maybe even 7 or 8 next year and 7 or 8 the year after, that spells something good for stocks as well.
And when you consider also, Kyle, that the yields are so low, even if we get a mediocre 6-8% in earnings growth, the spread between very, very low interest rates and those earning numbers does still create a tailwind for stocks.
You look at the Fed valuation model, which is something that we've rolled out at seminars before that I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, it's at many seminars in the future, but it's so clear that when you compare what you can get for a dollar invested in the S&P versus a dollar invested in just about any bond, any safe bond anywhere in the world, you're going to earn far more. At least we expect you'll earn far more on that dollar invested in the stock market than you will on that dollar invested in bonds. And really, I think that's the comparison that you want to make is, what can I get for that dollar? What are my options? And yeah, I could be a little bit safer and get 1.5 over the next 10 years, or maybe I could take a little bit of risk and get, you know, 6-8% on stocks.
So to put a little bit of data behind that point, Kyle, FactSet thinks that the S&P is going to earn $166 this year. You divide that into the existing level of the S&P at 2847, you get an earnings yield in the upper 5% range. Contrast that to the 10-year Treasury, basically 1.5%. And you see that 5.5 is a bigger number than 1.5 any way you measure that. And, you know, nothing's for nothing for that earnings yield. You're going to put up a little bit of volatility, as Paige just mentioned a bit ago, that, you know, we've got some technical selling going on, increasing volatility. But, you know, I'll stick to the basic arithmetic behind this point that 5.5 is a bigger number than 1.5. And it's only at times when the earnings yield is below bond yields that the markets tend to fall apart after a while. And, you know, the point is the market is not expensive now. We're trading at fairly average valuations. To Steve's point, you throw into the mix that interest rates are at extremely low levels now, which historically have tended to support higher multiples or higher PEs in the market. And then the additional point that earnings are supposed to go up 8, 9, 10, maybe 11% the next couple of years. I think once we get past some of these trade conflicts and some of the trade wars, and at some point, you know, let's just agree to try to resolve the issues and move forward, people could be pleasantly surprised. You know, I say this so often, we've never had a recession in U.S. history where the problem started overseas. That doesn't mean that we can't have one or we won't have one, but it's never happened. 200 years of history here, that it just hasn't happened. And, you know, the point of it all is, we don't export a lot. You know, 12% of our GDP, Germany's is over 40. That's why they're in trouble, contracted just this most recent quarter. Japan's is over 20%. China's is over 20%. So when their exports start fading, they're in big trouble, as opposed to our model with only 12% exports. And our biggest trading partners are Canada and Mexico. So it's unlikely that the trade war, unless it dramatically intensifies from here, you know, would be enough to really put us in a recession. But it's, you know, pretty hard to say because the policy changes, it appears just at, you know, every day they're kind of reversing themselves, then they double up and then they back off. But the point is, trade's only 12% of our economy. You know, look at the impact that consumer spending makes, and it absolutely dwarfs the impact of exports here. You know, for my perch, things look pretty good. It's so important to remember that really a blink of an eye, a recession is over. You know, you and I were talking about this earlier today, that, you know, the average recession is 4 to 6 quarters. And by the time most recessions start, we're halfway through them, which, you know, do the math. That means that by the time you find out that the recession is happening, it's going to be over in 4 months. And big money in the market tends to jump in 6 to 9 months ahead of time, which is really a pretty simple explanation as to why it's pretty crazy to try to time all this. You know, you look at the markets and they're basically priced where they were last summer. So we haven't gone anywhere in 12 months. And that's as good as a correction in my books. You know, the market on average goes up 9-10% a year. We haven't gone anywhere since last summer, right? Market tanked last fall. We were down quite a bit. Then we were off to the races this spring, but year over year, we haven't gone anywhere. So people keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. Well, maybe it just did drop, but you didn't hear it, that we had the sideways correction. It's not to say the market can't go down anymore. My guess is until they resolve the trade issues, they're not going to bring clarity to the economies of the world. They're not going to create a support level for the markets. We'll keep challenging support levels until trade issues get resolved. But we've got a lot of other pieces in place. And I think it's just for that one issue, things could turn around maybe a little bit quicker than people realize. Well, folks, that's the end of another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.